You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 622.
On Flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello once again to the mayor of Chicken Town.
Hello, Kevin. I am here for another super show about Super Chick.
Filling in for Cornflake again. So we had, there were storms, there were power outages. Many things. Cornflake is battling nature and the elements.
And yeah, we had a surprise return of winter this week.
Well, it's winter. Everybody forgets that.
It's really spring, though.
Here in New England. April is winter.
Yeah.
And it's miserable. And here we are. And look,
it came in like a lion.
April kept Cornflake off the show.
Yes.
We believe Cornflake will be back next week, but the timing kind of worked out because we can just get all this over with right now. The weird stuff that we started last week.
We won't stretch it out any longer.
Yeah, you know, so this is going to be Super Chick Deep Dive Part 2. We got a long way to go, a lot to cover. Uh-huh. I really want to do it all right now because we can't do Part 3 of this.
Oh, come on. No.
That'd be some kind of FCC violation, I think. You can't do 3 Super Chick episodes. So we started last week, Super Chick Deep Dive, we called it, but it was really a discussion of the Croft Super Show, classic Saturday morning show from Sid and Marty Croft, featuring Captain Cool and the Kongs, a goofy made-up rock band for mm-hmm. the kids, including, yes, Super Chick. And then from there, we expanded to look at Deborah Klinger, who played Super Chick and did a million other things in a very interesting career. So we kind of used Deborah as an excuse to discuss all kinds of stuff
from sure.
show business and pop culture of back in the day. So we left off in the middle of the Croft Super Show. We discussed Croft Super Show season 1. And so we're going to pick up with season 2, in
right.
which many things changed.
Definitely.
So the theme park is gone.
Yeah, they basically got all that they could out of it.
The world of Sid and Marty Croft, by the time season 2 happened, the theme park no longer existed.
Yeah, and it's sad because it kind of takes away a little bit of the specialness of the between story segments.
Yeah, the Captain Cool and the Kong segments for season 2, it was just shot in a studio. It just looks like a regular TV show.
Yep, with the audience of kids.
They've got kids, they've got a stage. It looks like every other variety show the Crofts were producing back then, of which there were many. So other big changes for the band is, well, we lost a member. We've gone from 5 members of Captain Cool and the Kongs down to 4.
So long, Flatbush.
Flatbush, gone. Burt Summer. And evidently, again, based on the Debbie Klinger interview mm-hmm. that we heard, I assume that they just fired him. Like,
right.
why do we need 5 of them? It'd be cheaper to have 4. But evidently, it was his choice, I think. It sounded from what Debbie was saying, like Burt Summer no longer wanted to be Flatbush.
Yeah.
He just wanted to move on and do other stuff. He was an actual musician, singer-songwriter type.
Yeah, he was at Woodstock, as we pointed out
he played
last
Woodstock.
Episode.
Enough Captain Cool and the Kongs, so no more Flatbush. So they really retooled the band, the look, certainly. New costumes for season 2.
Absolutely. They all had kind of denim jumpsuits or pants and jacket combos with different appliques on them.
Yeah, it was a lot of matching costumes now, sort of a denim look. I don't know if it was actual denim, but whatever.
Yeah, denim or pretend denim.
Yeah, but the glam look was out.
Completely
anyway.
Out.
Those wild glam rock costumes of season 1 with all the sparkles and everybody had their own crazy thing going.
Yeah, although, you know, Turkey and Nashville still have pretty crazy curly hair, but that's their own hair.
Yeah, Nashville's hair isn't blue anymore for season 2. The Captain Cool and the Kong segments are different throughout the show mm-hmm. as well. It was more wacky, corny, stupid jokes that they would do together.
Yeah, that's a bit unfortunate.
It was pretty ridiculous. And then they do like a Turkeys with Turkey, where in which Turkey, the drummer, would read a goofy poem.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Cool would read a letter. He'd fish a letter out of a goofy mailbox. So they had some new bits worked out for season two.
And some, you know, some jokes between a pair of the band members.
Sure. And some songs as well. You'd get a song or two from the band during the show as well. And many of the songs are quite good.
Yeah, I think these were the songs that were eventually... A lot of these songs wound up on their album.
They made a record. They made two, actually. There's Captain Cool and the Conks did a record of music plus a record of the comedy bits and bits from the segments and stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm glad we don't have that.
I think I have a copy of that.
Okay.
Our friend Disco Mike, years ago, he has the vinyl version
of
the wacky Croft Super Show comedy bits record, and he set me up with a cassette copy.
All right.
Way back in the 90s. Now, as far as the Croft Super Show segments, Dr. Shrinker is gone.
Gone.
Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, sadly, are gone.
I know. That was a big loss, because I don't think there's anything that quite matches it in the new lineup.
That was the strongest segment by far, of course. Also, sadly, perhaps still around, Wonderbug.
Oh.
We did get a whole new season of Wonderbug, which somehow made the cut.
Hard to believe. Although the effects have improved significantly, I think.
Yeah, they really lightened up on using the puppet version of the car.
Yeah.
I mean, Wonderbug, it was a real dune buggy, which mm-hmm. they would rig to drive around looking as if no one was actually driving it. And then for the flying sequences, they just use cheap green screen effects, mm-hmm. or they'd use a little tiny toy version with little dolls representing the kids riding around. And then sometimes Wonderbug would be a puppet for no good reason.
Just because so he could kind of, you know, use his facial expressions.
Yeah, I don't think the puppet version of the car really worked at all in season one, and they really cut that out for the most part, I think, in season two.
Yeah, I think they just have actually more expressive animatronics that they use in place of that puppet.
And in season two, we get Casey Kasem in one episode.
Yeah.
That was exciting. Casey Kasem, you know, known for Top 40 and known for all his voiceovers, cartoon stuff, but also did a bit of on-screen acting.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an example. He shows up on Wonderbug, which was pretty exciting. I saw Casey Kasem recently on an old rerun of Quincy.
Oh, yeah?
Also. Yeah, so he was around.
Sure.
Casey.
Trying to have a bit of an acting career.
In season one, there's a Dr. Shrinker episode with Gordon Jump from WKRP in Cincinnati. And season two, Gordon Jump shows up on Wonderbug.
Yeah, he must have been one of their stable of actors.
Yeah, and he kind of pops as somebody who can really act.
that is true. He definitely has significantly more talent than most of the other actors in those sequences.
Including the stars of the show.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. He kind of shows them up.
The three kids that drive around in Wonderbug all the time, maybe not the finest actors in the world on Wonderbug. One of them went into porn.
Yes. You guess which one.
We won't say which one. Whoever your favorite is, assume that that's the one that went into porn, kids. So now we have a couple of new segments in Croft Super Show this year, replacing the ones that they got rid of.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Magic Mongo.
Oh my gosh, I didn't think anything could be more ridiculous than Dr. Shrinker, but...
Magic Mongo, so similar to Wonderbug in that it's kids that find like a magic thing.
Yes.
So in this case, we've got three kids on the beach, they find a bottle, and a genie pops out of the bottle. It's Magic Mongo.
Yeah, it's not a pretty belly dancer style genie, it's a chubby middle-aged guy genie.
It's not Barbara Eden, it is Lenny Weinrib. So this is Lenny Weinrib, who's again mostly a voice guy. Mm-hmm. Lenny Weinrib was the voice of H.R. Puff and stuff. Outside the world of Crofts, Lenny Weinrib was Time for Timer.
Yes, that gives me some baseline of affection for him, I think.
Yikes, we love Time for Timer. Yeah, he was Time for Timer. He did a million cartoons and other stuff. Oh, he was the voice of Grimace in the McDonald's commercials.
Oh, hey, that's appropriate.
For Hanna-Barbera, he was Inch High Private Eye, the little short, little tiny secret agent dude, among a million other things. He voiced Superman and on Sesame Street, those Superman segments they did early on.
Street. I barely even remember those.
He also was Superman for Filmation on The Brady Kids.
Oh, you wow. Know,
Wonder Woman, famously, her first TV appearance was on the Brady Kids, the Brady Bunch cartoon. But Superman also appeared on Brady Kids.
That's wild.
Voiced by Lenny Weinrib. Now, here's the real weird Lenny Weinrib credit, which ties in with Magic Mongo. Magic Mongo is very clearly influenced by the Beach Party movies of the 60s.
100%.
The Frankie and Annette movies, which we mentioned last week because Harvey Lembeck, father of Michael Lembeck, a.k.a. Captain Cool, Harvey Lembeck played the goofy biker dude in a bunch of the Frankie and Annette beach movies. So Magic Mongo, it's all set on the beach. The whole series takes place just goofing around on the beach. And there's, once again, a biker dude
who's
causing trouble for the kids and the genie. So similar format to the Beach Party movies. Lenny Weinrib was also a director and directed Beach Party movies in the 60s.
Wow, this is just kind of a vortex of connections that's really blowing my mind.
Oh, and we're not even done with
the connections.
Oh, no. But he didn't direct the Frankie and Annette movies, I think. He did not direct Beach Blanket Bingo.
So not the more well-known or well-regarded ones.
There were other studios doing their own rip-off beach movies back then as well, I think. And Lenny directed three beach movies a decade earlier.
Uh-huh. And there's one more Lembeck connection, too.
Yeah, when we get to the kids, Helene Lembeck, one of the girls, another Lembeck. That's Michael Lembeck's sister.
Yep.
Harvey Lembeck's daughter. She's one of them. She did a bunch of movie and TV stuff over the years. Her only big recurring part that I saw was Welcome Back, Cotter.
Oh.
She was a sweat hog.
Sure.
Not one of the major ones, of course, but she had a recurring part in the class, in Mr. Cotter's class, which would have been right around the same time.
Yeah, that seems appropriate for kind of her character.
Absolutely.
Style.
She'd fit right in that goofy classroom. Paul Hinckley was the guy. He had very few credits that I could find outside Magic Mongo. He did one episode of ISIS.
Oh, sure.
The Secrets of ISIS.
Even though that was Filmation and not Croft, it's kind of the same.
Yeah.
The same universe.
Yes, that would have been a couple of years before this, I think. But that's about all he ever did, I think, as far as acting credits.
Yeah, he wasn't exactly blowing me away with his ability on Magic Mongo.
The third kid was the other girl, was Robin Dearden, who spends the whole series in a red bikini.
Yes. It's shocking.
That is her costume. For every episode, she's just in a bikini all the time. A very cute girl. Again, bunch of acting credits here and there. The only big recurring acting credit for her was a soap opera called Generations.
Mm.
She had a regular run on, evidently. Fun trivia on her, though, is that her husband, to this day, I believe, is Bryan Cranston.
Right.
From Breaking Bad and Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, I think they met while on a show together.
They did, and that show was Airwolf.
Wow.
So yeah, that's Robin. She's still around. She appeared on one episode of Breaking Bad, I think, as well, so still does some acting. Those were your three kids on Magic Mongo. Now, the new evil biker dude was Ace, played by Bart Braverman.
Mm.
The only other interesting credit I saw for Bart was he was in A Very Brady Christmas.
Oh-ho.
The reunion Christmas movie of the late 80s. It says he played a mechanic.
Hmm.
So I'm guessing that might have been like the Bobby Brady scenes because Bobby was becoming a race car driver.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with that special as you are.
Well, I guess we know what we're doing tonight then. It's Christmas in April.
Oh, goodness.
Here in Chickentown.
I'm not sure I can handle that.
Now, Ace had a goofy lackey assistant biker dude named Duncey.
Oh, yeah, that's subtle.
Duncey played by Larry Larson. Here's the fun credit for Larry Larson. Another Croft credit. We were talking about Lost Saucer last week.
Correct.
With the Dorse.
The
dog-horse hybrid alien creature on Lost Saucer. Larry Larson played the Dorse.
Probably a better role than this dumb biker sidekick.
He spends the whole series, Lost Saucer, just hopping around inside the goofy horse head, dog body Dorse costume.
That's kind of sad, but kind of appropriate.
That's the cast of Magic Mongo. It's very, very silly.
It's pretty dumb.
As you can imagine. Now, the other new segment, and my favorite as a kid, Bigfoot and Wild Boy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not nearly as good as Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, but in terms of these three segments, it definitely stands out. And it's got kind of, you know, an action feel to it, an action show.
This segment, when I was a kid, I'd watch Bigfoot and Wild Boy, and it would make me want to go outside and run around, which is all they did on Bigfoot and Wild Boy.
I think, I mean, that's good. You know, that's TV sort of exerting a good influence on kids. Just
put down the bowl of Lucky Charms, kid. There's a world out there. Mm-hmm. Burn some calories.
Yeah, go look for Bigfoot.
I know we've talked about Bigfoot and Wild Boy on the Flopcast at least a couple of times in the past. We did a whole episode. I think we did a 4.5 list about Bigfoot.
Sure.
Many years ago, and you better believe Bigfoot and Wild Boy made my list. And Bigfoot was huge in the 70s.
Yeah.
This would have been coming out of that scam movie that tricked everybody.
Oh, sure.
The Patterson-Gimlin, is that what it's called? Something like that.
Do not know.
You know the one.
Yeah.
Bigfoot running through the woods looking back at the camera. I think that was early 70s that those guys did that to trick everybody.
Yeah.
And it worked to this day. Ugh. But this was, you know, Bionic Bigfoot would have been right around the same time over on $6 Million Man. Everybody loved Bigfoot.
Yeah, and this Bigfoot runs in slow motion like they would do with $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman.
That was the effects, the special effects for Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Because if Bigfoot's going to run somewhere, he runs in slow motion. They tilt the camera on a weird angle. They play a weird little sound effect.
Yeah, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
It makes no sense at all. And Bigfoot did a lot of jumping as well. They constantly show just giant, mighty, like the Incredible Hulk, doing these big, crazy jumps through the air. He'd run and jump. He's Bigfoot.
Yeah, and he speaks some sort of primitive language with some English words, but
he'd kind of slip back and forth between some limited English and some strange Bigfoot talk.
Yeah, but and yet Wild Boy, who was raised by Bigfoot, speaks perfect English and also can communicate with Bigfoot in his language.
Yes, as they explain in the opening sequence that Bigfoot found a little kid in the woods and raised him. It's fantastic. Bigfoot, I thought, looked really good.
Yeah.
They did a nice job with the Bigfoot suit and sticking the fur to the guy's face.
I agree. Yeah, it's a successful costume.
Good-looking Bigfoot. Bigfoot played by Ray Young, who has a lot of guest TV parts on IMDb. Nothing really popped out at me as being particularly noteworthy. Wild Boy, played by Joseph Butcher, who also just has, he has not as many credits, and again, nothing really pops out.
Mm-hmm.
I think they hired Joseph Butcher for his legs. a very leggy costume.
Oh, okay, yeah.
On Wild Boy.
Not quite as skimpy as the girl in Magic Mongo, but yeah, he kind of wears like fur.
Yeah, it's like little Tarzan shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
And some sort of crude vest.
Yeah.
Made out of things you'd find in the woods.
Yep.
And off he goes. There's also a young girl on the show, Susie, who's a Hispanic or Native American, or I don't know what she was supposed to be.
I think she's probably supposed to be Native American, judging by the that she wears braids.
Yeah. The universal symbol for Native people on television.
Yeah, and her father is a park ranger.
Yes. Susie, played by Monica Ramirez. And yeah, she was just a girl that knew Bigfoot and Wild Boy and would help them. A fun, fun series. It gets really weird. Like, even beyond, okay, Bigfoot exists.
Yeah.
They went wild with science fiction and strange technology and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. They had aliens.
Bigfoot was the least crazy thing in Bigfoot and Wild Boy.
That's funny.
Yeah, yeah. There were aliens. Like a flying saucer with aliens arrived, and these weird aliens were wandering around zombifying everybody. Mm-hmm. That was good. We're still in the middle of season two as far as reviewing them, but the one that we just saw has an evil scientist with a ray that turns animals evil.
Yeah.
And he turned a wolf evil. The wolf attacks and bites a kid, and the kid starts turning into like half a werewolf with fuzzy arms. That kid, Christopher Knight.
Peter Brady
from the Brady Bunch, guest starring on Bigfoot and Wild Boy.
Yes.
Very, very exciting. So many Croft Brady connections. We've already named a couple of them. That's season two, essentially, of Croft's Super Show. But we should also cover Captain Cool and the Kongs beyond Croft's Super Show, because they were out there.
Yeah.
They were getting sort of a publicity push, both to promote the show, and then it seemed like there was a plan, like, to what else can we do with Captain Cool and the Kongs?
Yeah.
Could we turn this into
a genuine
ongoing,
band,
successful band? They went on American Bandstand.
Yeah. I think that was at the beginning of the first season, because they're all in their glam getup.
Yeah, this was season one, American Bandstand. They did a song. There's an interview you can see on YouTube. They're interviewed by Dick Clark, and out of character.
Right.
Is what's interesting is that they're not like, hey, I'm Captain Cool.
Right.
Like they, yes, my name's Michael Lembeck. I play Captain Cool. It's they sure. go out of character. They're introduced by their real names. They recognize that Turkey, Mickey McMeal, was the drummer in Three Dog Night.
Mm-hmm.
Dick gets borderline creepy with Super Chick.
Yeah, he's obviously quite taken with
he's like, and who's this young lady?
Cute Deborah Klinger.
And he actually starts like stroking her chin and her face.
No.
He's looking at Dick Clark is fascinated by Debbie Klinger's lipstick because
uh-huh.
she's got like sparkly makeup on.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, who does your makeup? How does this work? And how do you keep your makeup in place? And he's literally touching her face, like right below her lip.
Yeah.
But he's America's oldest teenager. He can do whatever he wants.
Sure.
So very weird appearance, which you can see on YouTube. They went on Donnie and Marie.
Yes.
Another Kroft-produced variety show.
Yes, staying part of the Kroft family.
I think people forget that Donnie and Marie was a Kroft show, because you think of Kroft's Saturday morning.
Right.
And they had some forays into primetime, most of which were huge failures. But this was
most of which were variety shows, if not all.
Variety shows.
Yeah.
This was a big hit show.
I watched it as a kid.
Everybody did. This was a national phenomenon, international. Donnie and Marie.
Yeah.
You know, rising up out of the Osmonds were big enough already.
Sure.
And Donnie... as a solo boy singer,
yeah,
was huge. And then suddenly, let's pair him up with the kid sister, and it was TV magic.
Yeah, I mean, I remember liking it as a kid just because it was a goofy show, and they would do skits and things like that. I mainly remember it for that.
This was the golden era of mid to late 70s
yeah.
variety TV. So Captain Cool and the Kongs were guests on Donnie and Marie. That whole episode is available online.
Mm-hmm.
And... gotta watch the whole thing. It's astonishing.
They do a Superman kind of pastiche?
Yeah, they do a bit where Donnie is a superhero, Captain Purple.
Yes.
And he kind of crashes in on a Captain Cool and the Kongs rehearsal,
mm-hmm.
and they have a weird exchange. Jimmy Osmond, the younger brother,
yeah.
shows up to sing a Christmas song.
Once again, we'll have Christmas in April.
Yes, yes. The other guests that day, besides Captain Cool and the Kongs, were Ruth Buzzy,
mm-hmm.
coming off of Laugh-In, Ruth Buzzy, and Merle Haggard.
Yeah.
Classic country star Merle Haggard, showing his goofy side on Donnie and Marie.
Yeah, and Ruth Buzzy, of course, as we said, was on The Lost Saucer, another Kroft show.
Yes, she's all tied into the Kroft family as well. Ruth gets to play her goofy character. What's her name? Like the old lady that whacks you with a
yeah. I never knew that the name of that character. But
yeah,
from Laugh-In.
She got to suit up in that goofy character at one point. Captain Cool and the Kongs perform a medley.
Yeah.
Of songs. When Debbie takes the lead, Super mm-hmm. Chick sings Crystal Carousel.
Yeah.
Which I've got to think is a reference to Crystal Carousel back at the Kroft theme park.
It has to be.
Did they make a song for the carousel?
It could have been.
It's another piece of the puzzle that is the long-lost world of Sid and Marty Kroft theme park.
I think everything goes back to that theme park somehow. There's everything.
Debbie singing Crystal Carousel. Donnie sings All By Myself, the Eric Carmen song.
Mm-hmm.
While the wacky comedy is that there's a million people crowding all around him.
Right.
The whole cast and all the guests and Captain Cool and the Kongs show up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's goofy. The big finale of the whole show is some kind of medley of songs and peoples from all around the world.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that. That got a little bit problematic.
It gets a bit problematic. The whole show started problematic.
Yes.
The show opens with Donnie and Marie like in Indian costumes, Native American
yeah.
garb for their big opening number. Now, for the big around the world medley, Donnie and Marie are... dressed in like Japanese people.
Yes. Oh no.
Then they cut to Merle Haggard, who's like an Arabian sheik character.
Even worse.
Captain Cool and the Kongs get off easy because they send them to Scotland. They're all wearing kilts.
Yes. And that's a weird connection to the Bay City Rollers, who kind of took over that Saturday morning show from Captain Cool and the Kongs.
They're dressed like the band that stole their job.
Yeah.
Instead of continuing with Kroft Super Show, they kind of pivoted to Bay City Rollers instead of Captain Cool and the Kongs. Ruth Buzzy is in Russia. She does like a crazy Russian
that's
dance.
That's right. That's right.
And then the big finale is little Jimmy Osmond comes out again to in an Uncle Sam suit, sparkly Uncle Sam suit, to perform Yankee Doodle Disco.
Oh, goodness. I blocked that out. We watched it that just recently, but I...
You can watch the whole thing.
Yep. We'll put that in the show notes.
It's amazing. Now, they weren't done making guest appearances on Kroft variety shows.
Right.
Captain Cool and the Kongs also show up on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Now, time-wise, what was the timeline of that show versus...
This would have been also Kroft Super Show Season 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because this was January 1977.
Okay.
That this aired. January 23rd.
Yeah, Flatbush is not in that. It is not in either of these appearances, though. Both of them are just for the four-member band.
Yeah, so they would have shot the whole first season by then.
Yeah.
And Flatbush had taken a walk.
Sure.
And here's Captain Cool and the Kongs on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour, the notorious Brady Bunch Variety Hour. Somebody thought, let's take the Bradys, put them on a variety show.
Yeah, I think the weirdest thing about, you know, there's some good guest spots on that show that we've watched, but they have these underwater dancers because they have the big pool on the show, and there's always, you know, some cutting back and forth from the performers to these swimming ladies.
Yeah, well, Donnie and Marie had ice skaters.
Okay,
and so when it was time to do the Brady Bunch show, they thought, let's build a giant swimming pool and have like synchronized swimming dancing girls.
Yeah, Sid probably thought of that.
It was probably Sid's idea. Yes. The other guests on this episode of Brady Bunch Variety Hour were Lee Majors and Farrah Fawcett Majors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And what a Hollywood power couple that was.
Yes.
I don't know if the kids today understand.
No, I don't think they do.
I mean, what do you compare that to?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of our power couples break up eventually. I mean, I guess they did. They did divorce as well.
They all break up eventually. Yeah. But I guess today you got like, what, Beyonce?
Yeah. Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Yep. But yeah, this was like a Brad and Angelina caliber Hollywood power couple.
Sure.
You've got the $6 million man, and then meanwhile, Farrah Fawcett, which was Charlie's Angels, and her poster and dolls, and she was huge.
Oh, yeah.
There they were together on the Brady Bunch variety show. Captain Cool and the Kongs performed a song called Names.
Mm-hmm.
They also do a cover of Don't Go Breaking My Heart.
Oh, yeah.
Elton John Kiki D song.
Yes. I could see, like, is that like a trade-off between Captain Cool and Super Chick?
I assume that's, Super Chick must have taken up the Kiki part.
Wow, I haven't seen that yet. I want to see that.
Yeah, we got to track down the whole Brady Bunch series and review in excruciating detail.
Yes, anyone out there who has a connection, please let us know.
Now, after the Bay City Rollers took over, Captain Cool and the Kongs were no longer hosting Kroft Super Show, but they were still around. They were still in the mix. And Bay City Rollers hosted that year's Saturday morning preview show.
Wow, that must have been crazy.
The Friday night primetime special to show the kids, here's what's on Saturday morning this season. And man, those were exciting shows.
They were fun.
Those were amazing back in the day. It was called Bay City Rollers Meet the Saturday Superstars.
Mm.
This would have been 1978, I believe. The new cartoons that year were Yogi Bear's Space Race.
Oh, was one, sure.
Which when they preview it, they say, first there was Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Yogi is obviously joining that hallowed tradition.
Kids can't wait for more Star Wars. Here you go.
Sure.
Here's Yogi in space. That's just as good. Godzilla had a cartoon at this time.
Oh, I vaguely remember that. Wasn't it like Godzuki was on that?
Eventually, too? Yeah. I don't know if they'd introduced the little one Godzuki at this point, but it was the Godzilla Power Hour.
Oh, man.
Which Janna of the Jungle was part of that. There was a Jungle Girl cartoon.
Oh, I vaguely remember that.
That was good. Fantastic Four.
Yes.
Cartoon. There was the 60s version.
Okay.
And then there was the 70s version.
With the robot instead
of... The robot.
Yeah.
Herbie the Robot instead of Human Torch.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not as familiar with those.
Oh, yeah. I was watching that. There were cartoon versions of Ali Oop and Broomhilda that season. And then when they get to previewing the new Bay City Rollers show as well, or maybe it was called Kroft Superstar Hour at this point, the history, the timeline is muddy, but... The new segments were Horror Hotel, of course, and that was Witchy Poo from back on HR Puff and Stuff.
Yep.
Now it's Witchy Poo, and Dr. Blinky the Owl was running around, and Hoodoo was there from Lidsville.
But not played by Charles Nelson Reilly, alas.
Yes, played by a new guy, Paul Gale, who also played Itchy in the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes, the connections keep coming.
Oh, there's so many connections between the Crofts and the Holiday Special.
Because that was from the world of variety specials itself.
Oh, yeah. And the other segment on the new Bay City Rollers show was Lost Island. which is much harder to see these days.
I haven't managed to see any of that.
The currently streaming version of Bay City Roller Show does not include Lost Island. Mm-hmm. And Lost Island was amazing because this was like the Justice League of America of Croft shows.
Oh,
this was a super group. They rounded up characters from many of the previous Croft shows and just shoved them all together into one crazy combo show. So you had Puffin Stuff and Sigmund, the sea monster, and there were Slee Stacks and Enoch. A lot of the sets and settings looked like Land of the Lost, essentially.
I guess that makes sense. That was their longest. That show had three seasons, which outdid any of their other shows.
I think Weenie was there as well, the genie from Lidsville. They did not have Dr. Shrinker, but they had a Dr. Shrinker lookalike character called Dr. Death Ray.
Okay, by the same actor.
yeah, same guy. So Lost Island was just amazing and bizarre and hard to find these days. Very hard to find.
That's a bummer.
Captain Cool and the Kongs were guest stars on this Saturday morning preview special.
Mm-hmm.
They perform And I Never Dreamed, which was kind of their attempt at a hit single.
Yeah.
That was released as a single. It's a really good song.
Yeah.
It sounds very much like a Bee Gees kind of song.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and they perform that on the special. They're in like special white costumes.
Yeah, that corresponds to what they're wearing on the cover of their album.
Yes, they do. And I Never Dreamed. Louise Duart, who plays Nashville, also appears in the special in another segment doing her Cher impersonation.
Oh, yeah.
The other guest stars on this preview show were Eric Estrada.
Oh, gosh. We just discussed him recently.
From Chips. That's right. We just talked about him on our Dynamite show. Joe Namath, football player Joe Namath.
Okay.
There's another Brady connection.
That's right. He was on the Brady Bunch.
Just when Bobby pretended that he was sick and dying because he wanted to meet Joe Namath.
Yep. Pretty tricky, Bobby.
Billy Barty also shows up playing Joe Namath. He comes out claiming to be Joe Namath.
I see.
The finale of the Saturday preview special is like a 50s style thing, like Grease or Sha Na Na.
Okay.
So this has Bay City Rollers dressed up like Sha Na Na, essentially. They're in goofy 50s costumes.
I don't know what to make of that. I mean, wasn't Sha Na Na goofy enough?
Evidently not, because you ought to see the Bay City Rollers. They lost the kilts. They put on 50s costumes. And Eric Estrada as well is in a 50s outfit.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then Billy Barty and Patty Maloney.
Wow.
Who was the other little person that they worked together on all these shows back then. Yeah, they come out like singing and dancing 50s style.
I really need to see this.
Patty Maloney, by the way, played Lumpy, Chewbacca's son, in the holiday
special. We got the whole family. Last week we talked about Mala.
Yeah. Chewbacca's whole family was also working for the Crofts on the side.
It makes sense.
We mentioned the Captain Cool and the Kongs album. Also for season two of the Super Show, there was a Croft Super Show comic book.
Yes.
It was published by Whitman.
And you have them, don't you?
There were six issues. I have all six right here.
Nice. Yes. So they have, I see some photo covers.
Every issue has a photo cover, and you can see there's photos on the cover of Captain Cool and the Kongs in their season two costumes, Bigfoot and Wild Boy, Magic Mongo, Wonderbug.
Yes.
In some issues, they'll have a story for the three segments, and then Captain Cool and the Kongs, they'll just be like a page or two of joke and gag kind of pages. But then there's also, in at least one issue, I was flipping through, this is number four, I think, they dropped Wonderbug for this issue, even though they're on the cover. And there's a whole Captain Cool and the Kong story.
Oh, inside. That's exciting. We will, of course, share these in the show notes.
Yes. So, you know, very, very simple, goofy little stories, of course. But they made six issues. And yeah, here they are. If
you're
a Croft Super Show fan, as evidently we are, got to get yourself some Croft comic books.
That's pretty cool.
Jump on eBay, everybody. Find yourself some Croft comics. I think we've pretty much exhausted the subject of Croft Super Show.
Yes, you'll be happy to know that portion is finally coming to an end, but we're not done talking about Deborah Klinger.
We got to get back to Debbie, because Deborah Klinger has even more of a career rolling beyond the world of the Crofts, of course. I mean, last week we talked about pre-Croft, which was the Klinger Sisters. One of the very first all-girl rock bands was Debbie and her sisters as the Klingers. And then the Rock Flowers, of course, her Mattel doll band. and all her backup singing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, outside the Crofts, she was doing some stuff even during the era of the Croft Super Show and shortly afterwards, just working from her IMDb page. Well, she did an episode of Barnaby Jones
mm-hmm.
in 1977. I have not seen that.
I've never seen that show.
I have never seen an episode of Barnaby Jones in my life.
I'm not even sure exactly what it is. A detective show?
Let me explain to you about what Barnaby Jones is. Yes. Let me mansplain Barnaby Jones. It was a long-running show. This was like early 70s, and it ran through up to 1980 or so. Yeah.
Well, I was a kid then.
It was one of those detective shows of the 70s, which there were a million detective shows, of course, back then. This was one of them. Starred Buddy Ebsen.
Okay.
Barnaby Jones was Buddy Ebsen. That's Jed Clampett
mm-hmm.
from Beverly Hillbillies. And his daughter-in-law, who he worked with, I think the son was murdered. They had to investigate the son's murder.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter-in-law he also works with for the entire run of the series was Lee Merriweather.
Okay.
You know, Catwoman.
Yes, one of the Catwomen.
One of the classic Catwomen of the 60s was Lee Merriweather. She was Catwoman in the movie.
Yeah, I've never seen. So I've only seen Julie Newmar and Eartha Kitt Catwoman. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to pop in the movie.
Okay. Maybe.
The movie's fantastic. Joker's wearing a mask. He's got a little mask like Robin over his eyes so that nobody will recognize that it's the Joker. Lee Merriweather was just for the movie back mm-hmm. in the Adam West era. And she did many other things as well.
Yeah.
Of course. The Munsters today. She was Lily Munster.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In the 80s. Yeah. I met her a few years ago. Yeah, very briefly. I got to meet Lee Merriweather. What a treat. Anyway, Debbie was a guest star on one episode of Barnaby Jones in 1977, which mm-hmm. we have not seen.
Nope.
Someday, perhaps. But let's move on to the Hardy Boys. That's more our style.
Yes.
Big fan of the Hardy Boys of the 70s.
Yeah, with Sean Cassidy and Parker Stevenson.
Yes.
That was a good show. And there was a Nancy Drew.
Yes.
As well.
It was a combo show.
Yeah.
With Nancy. Absolutely.
I was pretty fond of that show. It has a great theme music.
And Sean Cassidy was a huge pop star.
Yeah.
Simultaneously with playing Joe Hardy
mm-hmm.
on the Hardy Boys. And they took advantage of that.
They certainly did.
They were pretty shameless about Sean did a lot of singing in the middle of the Hardy Boys. It was like, guess what? Joe Hardy is also a singer, okay? Deborah Klinger guest starred on two episodes of the Hardy Boys.
Mm-hmm.
So, and one of them we haven't really seen yet. I flipped through an episode just scanning it in brief.
I don't think she's a major character in that.
Well, she is.
She is? Okay.
She's around through the whole thing. So season one, 1977, Debbie is on one episode. It's set in Hawaii, I mm-hmm. believe. I think they're on Hawaii, and they're surfing. It's Frank Hardy is going to be in a surfing competition.
Did the other Hardy brother ever get to do anything cool?
Well, Joe was the singer. Frank was the singer.
Okay.
So, yeah. Frank was the older brother, Parker Stevenson. And so they're surfing and Debbie is there.
Does she help them solve a mystery?
Yeah. Some kind of mystery breaks out, I'm sure. But Joe Hardy, Sean Cassidy, gets to sing a couple of Beach Boys surfer songs.
Wow.
He sings Fun, 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 and he sings Surfin' USA.
I see.
The other episode, which we did watch a few weeks ago, season two, 1978, and she's playing a totally different character this time. She's playing a singer.
Yes.
And it's a singer that has a history with Joe Hardy.
Yeah.
Like they both come from Bayport, Massachusetts, and used to sing together. Debbie is on tour with her band. You see her sing Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher and Higher.
Yeah.
You know
it was
that
nice
song.
That they gave her a chance to sing on this episode.
And that was Rita Coolidge. Did a version of that song, but somebody else had done it earlier. Anyway, everybody knows that song. I've seen Peter Tork do that song.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. In some Monkees tours, like each monkey would take a turn doing their own separate piece in the show. And Peter used to break out a banjo and perform Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher. Yeah, which was great. Debbie Klinger and Sean Cassidy actually sing a duet together.
That's right.
Yeah, Sean does his own song,
mm-hmm.
and then later on, at the end, after the whole
mystery
and crime is solved, I mean, it's like their manager was mixed up in a drug ring or something.
Yeah, it's kind of a complicated story.
Debbie gets framed and tossed into jail.
Yep.
At one point. Yeah, it's wild. But a lot of good singing with both Debbie Klinger and Sean Cassidy in this one. Very much worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was very interesting. I had no idea that this ever happened until we were looking into Debbie's credits. The American Girls.
Yeah.
This was Deborah was starring in a primetime TV series. This was fall of 1978.
Mm-hmm.
So she must have been like, yeah, go ahead, Bay City Rollers. You can keep the little Saturday morning show.
Sure.
I'm going prime time.
Yes.
And this was the show was called The American Girls. The concept was it was two young women who were TV news journalists driving around America in a van to do investigative reports and journalism and stuff and get into one wacky adventure after another.
Yeah, we only managed to find one episode on YouTube, but
yes.
Kind of interesting, but talk about her co-star.
Well, that's the real interesting part, is the two stars were Deborah Klinger and Priscilla Barnes.
From Three's Company.
Terry, blonde number three from Three's Company, several years before she would replace blonde number two on Three's Company. Yeah, she was starring in this show, The American Girls. I had no idea. The show did not last long. This was on just in the fall, September through November 1978.
It was a good concept, though.
Sure. Come on. And this was the era of Charlie's Angels and whatnot. This was a bit more serious a show, I think. Like, they were really taking it seriously. It was not silly, campy. Right.
Not and, just a, you know, bouncing boobs running around show.
Not a bouncing boobs show. Not sure if that's a plus or a minus. Maybe it would still be on the air today.
Yeah.
They bounced a boob or two. There is one episode you can see, and apparently only one episode that we could find on YouTube. And Priscilla Barnes is in a plane crash.
Yeah.
She's like stranded in the woods camping out by the site of the wreckage with the pilot. And meanwhile, Debbie's trying to find her. So kind of an unusual episode, I assume.
Yeah, we didn't get to see them, you know, work together as I assume they usually did.
Yeah, they're separate through most of the show. Anyway, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
I wish we could see. I would absolutely watch more episodes of American Girls.
Yes.
If they were available.
Yes. Then why not release the whole entire series set?
You know, that's what the people demand. The public craving for The American Girls on Blu-ray is palpable.
We've got to convince people that we represent a lot of people's opinions here on the Flopcast.
Hollywood should really turn to the Flopcast to determine what should be released.
Absolutely.
Including another show that I'm guessing is not available called The Runaways. I didn't even try to YouTube this. I don't know if this is around, but Debbie made one appearance on a show called The Runaways, which sounds very interesting. I have no memory of this. This was 1978, 1979. There were 17 episodes in total.
Huh?
The concept is there's a psychologist who works with runaways, runaways. So he's trying to search down and find and help teen runaways. That's the concept.
Okay. That's a good concept, but could get very creepy.
I assume Debbie played a troubled teen, perhaps, on the show. Who knows? A runaway? Not sure. But because of that concept, the guest list is pretty astonishing.
Basically, kind of like all the young hot actors
at
the time.
Well, here I flipped through the list of people who appeared on The Runaways, and I don't think all these people were teen runaways, because some of them would have been a bit long in the tooth.
You never know. They like to have people play teens well into their late 20s.
Notable guest stars include, besides Deborah Klinger, of course, include Terry Nunn.
Yes, from Berlin.
Berlin.
Okay.
Singer from Berlin, who also did a bit of acting in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Terry shows up. Mare Winningham.
Oh, yes.
Coming ahead of her Brat Pack era stuff. What'd she do? Like St. Elmo's
Fire? She was in St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah. Julie Adams, who was the girl in Creature from the Black Lagoon back in the 50s. She would not have been a teen runaway.
No.
She must have been playing something else on this show. Greg Evigan.
Yes, from My Two Dads.
Would have been just ahead of BJ and the Bear, I guess. And eventually My Two Dads, yes. Rosanna Arquette did one. Martin Cove.
What?
From Karate Kid.
Kreese.
He could not have been a runaway.
Yeah, probably not.
He would have been too long in the tooth for that. Martin Cove is there. Maureen McCormick.
Yes.
Come on. There's Marsha. I'd love to see Maureen McCormick as a troubled teen runaway.
Me too.
I left out the best part.
Okay.
They retooled this show. After four episodes, they retooled and they recast the lead psychologist.
Oh, wow.
But originally, for those first four original episodes, the star of The Runaways, the psychologist, was Robert Reed.
It must have been like the serious kind of work he wanted to do, and then they replaced him.
Another Brady connection.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Brady himself, Robert Reed, was the star of The Runaways. I don't know if he was the star when Debbie appeared on it or not.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he was the star when Maureen McCormick appeared on it. Did Mike and Marsha Brady get to appear together? I don't know. But anyway, again, I'd love to see The Runaways.
Yep.
They should have used the soundtrack by The Runaways.
Yes.
The same era as the
sure.
Joan Jett and Lita yeah. Ford out there playing the hits. Somewhere right around here, I also noticed that Deborah Klinger is in a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial.
Yes.
Which is very fun. It's one of those classic 70s fast food commercials where it's just the whole crew working at KFC is singing and dancing, you know, waving mops and buckets of chicken around.
Okay.
And the Colonel is in there with them. You get to see Deborah singing right next to Colonel Sanders.
That's exciting.
Check that out. Let's move on to something that's very important for the likes of us around here, being obsessed with Rankin Bass Christmas specials as we are. Deborah Klinger has some Rankin Bass Christmas special credits.
And one of them, we watched this half a dozen times before we realized.
Yeah, one of your favorites I know, and one of the lesser known, these are both among the lesser known Rankin Bass shows,
sure.
But Jack Frost was 1979.
Yeah, that's one of the traditional stop motion animation specials. And yeah, it's a later one, not as well known as Rudolph and Year Without a Santa Claus and Santa Claus is Coming to Town, but it's pretty good.
It's really good. And it's not the Jack Frost that's part of the larger RBU.
No, right. Yeah, not the trickster Jack Frost from Frosty's Winter Wonderland.
Yeah. There's a whole different telling of the Jack Frost tale. And it's not even a Christmas show.
You're right. It's actually technically a Groundhog Day special.
It starts with Groundhog Day. It's narrated by a groundhog.
Yes.
By Buddy Hackett.
Correct.
There's Deborah's second buddy. Deborah worked with Buddy Ebsen on
yeah.
Barnaby Jones and then Buddy Hackett in Jack Frost. And yeah, Deborah is kind of the
female lead, the love interest.
Yes. Jack Frost falls in love with Deborah Klinger.
Yes.
And can you blame him?
No.
He becomes a real boy.
Yeah. He asks Father Winter to make him human so he can court.
Just so he can hook up with Super Chick. So Deborah gets to sing.
Yeah.
In this, there's a lovely song. It's not a Christmas show, but the Christmas scene is really quite lovely.
Yeah, I really like that scene and that song, which is called Just What I Always Wanted.
This is Eliza and her family. Yeah, they have no money.
Right.
And so at Christmas time, they exchange empty packages and pretend that they're getting whatever it is that they want.
I know. And they
all
mime it
sing
out.
Together.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So yeah, Deborah takes the lead on one of the verses when her character is unwrapping her empty present.
Oh.
And it's really very sweet. And in that interview, that podcast interview that she did recently, she says that she was gifted the actual puppets, the stop motion figures of both her character and one of the other ones.
Spoiler alert, she does not marry Jack Frost. She winds up marrying the knight in golden armor.
Yeah. So evidently, Deborah Klinger to this day has two actual Rankin Bass stop motion puppets.
Yeah, that is remarkable.
Wow. The other Rankin Bass show that she did, again, lesser known, The Stingiest Man in Town.
Yeah, that is Rankin Bass's version of the Scrooge story. With
yes.
Tom Bosley.
Tom Bosley as a cricket. He's the cricket named Bah Humbug who narrates the whole thing. Bosley from Happy Days. This is regular animation,
yeah.
Not stop motion.
Yeah, if you know the Rankin Bass Hobbit, it kind of has a similar look to that.
Yeah. Walter Matthau plays Ebenezer Scrooge.
Correct.
That is fantastic Scrooge casting.
Yeah. I mean, if we didn't love, we love Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol far and above any other adaptation.
Yeah, needless to say,
this is not that caliber, but it's good.
This pales by comparison to Magoo's Christmas Carol. Every other version of Christmas Carol pales by comparison. In fact, everything in the universe
yes.
pales by comparison to Magoo's Christmas Carol. But yeah, it's fine. It's good. It's a nice Rankin Bass version of Scrooge. Deborah, again, gets to sing in this. She plays Martha Cratchit,
who's
the older Cratchit daughter.
I believe so.
Yeah, and she sings a song to Tiny Tim called Yes, There Is a Santa Claus.
Yes, another lovely Rankin Bass contribution from Deborah Klinger.
Well, it's no secret that we're awfully obsessed with Rankin Bass Christmas specials, and here's yet another connection to Deborah Klinger. Now let's put Debbie on the big screen, because it's off to Hollywood, off to the movies.
Yeah, Debbie was in a cult classic movie that I'd heard about but never seen until this year.
Yeah, we'd never bothered watching Midnight Madness before. And yeah, it has a following, certainly, this movie. I was aware of it. I knew what it was. I knew it was a mad world style scavenger hunt with a big cast kind of a movie. This was made by Disney, but it was kind of a little more adult, and I use that term very loosely.
Yeah.
It's still silly. It's still, you know, PG rated, I'm assuming.
There was
nothing really bad in it.
There's frat boys in it, so there's kind of like some very slightly raunchy situations.
It's a very strange movie.
It is. Tonally, it's all over the place.
They really should have just given up and made it rated R.
Mm-hmm.
Bounce some boobs.
Well, it has a big Animal House star in it. Stephen First
from Animal House, from Babylon 5, is in it. And so Deborah is, again, she's the female lead in this. It's Deborah and David Naughton, the Dr. Pepper guy.
Yes, famous from the I'm a Pepper Dr. Pepper commercials.
This is the guy. Also probably best known to horror fans from American Werewolf in London. And he made a few movies and stuff. My favorite David Naughton credit is Making It.
Yeah.
The disco sitcom.
Oh, once again, it comes around to disco.
Which there was, he did a song. There's a song called Making It, which was a popular disco song back in the day, and which you can still hear anytime you watch Meatballs.
The
dance scene in Meatballs, they're playing Making It as Bill Murray enters the room.
All right.
It's fantastic, but that's David Naughton, and he's really the star of this movie with Deborah. David's younger brother in Midnight Madness is a very young Michael J. Fox.
And I believe that's his first on-screen role.
Certainly one of them, if not his first, absolutely one of the first. This is like 2 years before Family Ties.
Yeah, and he's kind of, you know, the younger brother who looks up to David Naughton but doesn't get much of attention from him. And he actually, like, Deborah Klinger's character sympathizes with him and like kind of tries to comfort him.
He's terrific.
Yeah.
You can tell. Yikes.
Yeah, just a very genuine performance.
This kid can act.
And there's some other interesting quick appearances in this film. One of them is Paul Rubens, pre-Pee-wee.
At the arcade, the pinball arcade.
Yeah.
He's running a pinball place, Paul Rubens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great scene. Like, he really gets to be a weirdo.
Yeah, he stands out, you know, definitely in his segment.
The other cast member I made a note of was 80s super nerd Eddie Deason.
You can't have a nerd in movies without Eddie Deason.
Except Revenge of the Nerds.
Except Revenge of the Nerds.
Somehow.
Do you think he just refused?
I think that was offered to him and he turned it down for some reason. Yeah, I think they did want him.
Yeah, because he's in Grease.
He's there everywhere.
Everywhere. War Games, yeah.
Love him in War Games. He made a lot of fine nerd appearances. And he's a nerd in Midnight Madness. So this was Deborah Klinger's big movie role. Now, if we head back to TV, we've got just two or three more TV credits.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we cannot seem to be able to find is a TV movie from 1980 called Willow B, Women in Prison.
And I believe that it was based on or kind of inspired by an Australian women's prison drama.
Australian show called Prisoner, Cell Block H.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well known in its time. I actually had.
Never heard of that. So it's described as a failed television pilot for an American version of that Australian show. So it did not go to series, of course, so it was just a TV movie, Willow B, Women in Prison. I'm just reading from what was on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
But a formerly rich socialite convicted of DWI and vehicular manslaughter in a terrifying section of a women's prison. On the cast list, Deborah is listed first.
Okay.
That's her. She would have been the star.
Oh.
It would have been like a drama series. And I don't think you can find this anywhere.
No, not that I can tell.
Sorry, people, you can't see Super Chick in prison. Women in prison was certainly a trend.
Yeah.
They made a lot of women in prison trashy movies in the 70s and the 80s.
Sure.
Pam Grier made some, of course.
Yeah. Quite a few, I think.
Yes. Before the modern era of the quality Orange is the New Black type, which we never even finished.
We didn't.
Yeah, I bailed out. I just couldn't take it anymore.
Mm-hmm. But there was an Australian women's prison show that you did like.
I watched another Australian show. Yeah, there's a modern era Australian women in prison series, which I think is probably still on Netflix.
I think so.
Wentworth.
Yeah.
Which was several seasons and mesmerizing. Mm. Very good. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's also very dark. And you kind of get sucked in. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
Australian Women in Prison show, Wentworth. Check it out. But Debbie's not in that one. She was in Willow B, Women in Prison. A couple of TV credits left, including one that we definitely did watch because we love The Love Boat, and Debbie was on The Love Boat.
Yeah, we talked about this previously, in fact, because I know we included some pictures in the show notes.
Yeah, we briefly touched on Deborah Klinger. It was a two-parter.
It was a two-parter. Like, the main attraction were some actual fashion designers. This was like a fashion show cruise. So they had Bob Mackie, Gloria Vanderbilt.
Bunch of fashion people playing themselves on their way to a big Mexican fashion show.
Right.
Debbie was part of a different storyline.
Yeah, I mean, her dad and her boyfriend/secret husband.
She had a secret husband.
Were also in the fashion design business.
You cannot get goofier than a Love Boat plot.
I know, especially involving secret pairings.
That was the plot, was we're married, but we don't want my father to know that we're married.
And who played the father?
Here's another Rankin Bass connection. The father, Deborah's father on the Love Boat, was Dick Shawn, the snow miser.
Yes, it all comes full circle.
So that was fantastic. McLean Stevenson is in this episode. Mm-hmm. I guess that goes without saying.
Yeah.
You can safely assume McLean Stevenson was guest starring on The Love Boat. Jane Kennedy was there. Robert Vaughn was there. Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic Love Boat two-parter with Super Chick. Check that out, from 1981. The final TV credit on IMDb for Deborah Klinger is from just the following year, 1982. I have not seen this yet. It's around, I think. We can track this down if we want to. Heart to Heart.
Yeah, I've only seen bits and pieces of that show, and only recently, because you found it on one of those channels that shows old TV.
I've seen a few Heart to Heart reruns recently for the first time in decades. I used to watch a lot of Heart to Heart back in the day, just because it was on.
Yeah.
There were some of those like 10 o'clock shows, the 10 o'clock, 1 hour drama shows, comedy drama in the case of Heart to Heart. I would watch them just because I didn't want to go to sleep.
So makes sense.
I'd stay up and watch Quincy, or I'd watch Trapper John MD, or I'd watch Heart to Heart. So this is 1982, Heart to Heart season 3. And, you know, Heart to Heart was just the rich couple, Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the girl from U.N.C.L.E., Stephanie Powers was the girl from U.N.C.L.E., speaking of Robert Vaughn on The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Heart to Heart, and they were just traveling the world, having wacky adventures, living a glamorous life.
Sure.
That was Heart to Heart. This says, on vacation in Hawaii. Oh, they're back in Hawaii, just like on Party Boys. Debbie's back in Hawaii. Jennifer, that's Jennifer Hart, Stephanie Powers, overhears a woman arranging for the murder of the woman's husband. I don't know if Debbie was the woman planning a murder, or maybe she had some other part on the show. Not sure. We haven't seen that yet.
All right. We're going to have to investigate.
Have to check that out. The other noteworthy thing about this episode, it also guest stars Jonathan Frakes.
Yes.
This would have been 5 years ahead of Star Trek Next Gen.
Mm-hmm. And of course, he's still greatly involved in TV as a director.
A young Riker working with Super Chick. So, I mean, look how many worlds she touched in her career, in pop music,
and television and
TV
movies.
TV variety, cartoons, Christmas specials, primetime drama TV, movies.
I know, and yet never became really kind of she deserved to be more famous.
It certainly looked like she was getting a push in the late 70s into the early 80s. She popped up in so many different projects like this.
Very pretty girl.
Very super talented and a beautiful young lady and did an awful lot. We should say the mayor of Chickentown here. You set up a YouTube playlist.
I did. As on our Flopcast channel, you can find a playlist called Super Chick.
See that? The mayor did all the work for you. You're a click away from seeing all this Debbie Klinger stuff.
Yes.
We should plug that other podcast once again. So Deborah Klinger seems to have just dropped out of show business.
Yeah.
After Heart to Heart.
Pretty much.
That's her final IMDb credit. And I think she just kind of quietly got out of show business at that point, you know, which is fine. And she seems to have led a pretty quiet life since then, certainly out of the public eye. And even to this day, does not really have an online presence that I've run into anywhere.
So it was a nice surprise to find this interview.
Yeah, this is the Pop Culture Retro Podcast, where that's what they are good at on that show, is tracking people down that you don't hear on other shows. Because I've heard a few old show business guests on this show that I've never heard anywhere else. You know, Mino Palouse.
Yes. we're going to have to do a Mino Palouse deep dive at some point.
Matthew Laborto.
Yeah.
From WizKids and Little House on the Prairie and all that stuff. So these are people that I really have never heard anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And yikes, what a surprise, since we were already chattering about Deborah Klinger all the time. And then suddenly she popped up on a Pop Culture Retro podcast, so you can hear what she has to say. And so it's nice to hear that she's still out there. She's doing well, lives in Tennessee, I believe, and is a grandmother and is doing fine. So good for Debbie. The other Croft-related thing that we might as well mention right now is that there's a big Croft event coming to Massachusetts.
I know.
So there's a good way to wrap things up today. We're talking about Super Mega Fest, which is a longtime Massachusetts pop culture convention. This year, it is June 28th through the 30th in a new location, just a couple miles down the road, I think, from their old location in Natick, Massachusetts, at a new hotel that we've been to see Taylor Dayne in concert. I think of this as it's just the Taylor Dayne Hotel, although I don't think that's the actual name.
Probably not. They should call it that, though.
They really should rename it in Taylor's honor. Super Mega Fest, June 28th through the 30th, and they've got a bunch of Croft guests coming, including Johnny Whitaker and Scott Colden. Those were the kids on Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. And Johnny Whitaker, people also know from Family Affair.
Yes.
And from Tom Sawyer. He played Tom Sawyer to Jodie Foster's Becky Thatcher back in the day. Also coming to MegaFest, our friends from Land of the Lost, Wesley Yore and Kathy Coleman.
Yay!
I worked with them a couple of years ago down at DragonCon.
Yeah.
I spent the weekend interviewing with Wesley and Kathy, and they were so fun.
Delightful people.
It's the 50th anniversary of Land of the Lost.
It's amazing.
This year. So they are on tour this year, believe me. So very exciting that they're the big Land of the Lost tour coming to Massachusetts. And it'll be great to get to see Wesley and Kathy again. Now, the big exciting news. Last year at Dragon Con, we had Marty Croft.
Yes.
Sid and Marty Croft, the original brothers who brought us all this goofiness back in the day. Marty Croft came to Dragon Con. We got to meet him and see him talk. It was great. Marty died not long after that. We lost Marty. Sid Croft is coming to Super Mega Fest.
And he's up there in age.
Marty was the younger brother.
Right.
Who was 86 last year. Sid, I think, is 94.
Man.
And is on tour. He's doing several convention appearances this year.
All right. I hope they don't wear him out too much.
You know?
We got to preserve him.
Sid evidently has never appeared at an East Coast convention.
Wow.
This will be the first. And he's coming right down the road to Massachusetts. So, wow, that's exciting. Sid Croft is coming.
Are we going to pepper him with questions about the short-lived amusement park?
We're going to have a lot of questions, a lot of explaining to do about the world of Sid and Marty Croft.
We'll ask him about the Crystal Carousel song.
Yes, a lot of super chick questions for Sid. Anybody, if you're a Croft fan and you can possibly get to Super Mega Fest this June, please do and find us there. And there's some other people coming as well who are of interest to the likes of us, even beyond the world of Croft. Nicholas Hammond is coming. He was Spider-Man on the 1970s Spider-Man TV show.
Yeah.
And he was also one of the Von Trapp kids.
Oh.
Sound of Music.
Sure.
Jackson Bostwick is coming.
Shazam.
Speaking of 70s Saturday morning TV.
Yeah, that's from, was one of the Captain Marvels on Shazam.
Captain Marvel number one from the Filmation 70s Shazam series. Jackson will be there. The other sort of big name guest they've announced so far is Bruce Kulick, who was in Kiss.
Okay.
Bruce was the guitarist in Kiss during the Unmasked years.
Mm.
He was their guitarist 80s into the 90s. Until they put the makeup back on.
Oh.
So a strong lineup, anyway, to say the least, coming to MegaFest. So Croft people, hope to see you there. That's way more than enough of a Super Chick deep dive for this week.
Yes, we took you all the way down into the rabbit hole and out again.
We're so deep down in the Super Chick rabbit hole, I don't think we're ever going to get out.
Now we've dragged you down with us.
You're one of us. All right, that's enough of this. Let's stop. Can you get us out of here with some cornflake style show wrap up?
Absolutely. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/flopcast, on Instagram at the_flopcast, on Mastodon, we're at universidon.com/atflawcast. And you can find us on iTunes, where you could leave us a rating and or review. We would really appreciate it. Finally, flopcast.net is our website where I put together the show notes every week. Music from the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Try to find Sponge Awareness on YouTube. If you can, find the clip where Dick Clark is creepily stroking Ed's face during a bandstand appearance by Sponge Awareness. A very rare clip.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck finding that. Mayor, thanks for filling in for Cornflake once again and for wrapping up this super detailed look at Super Chick.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
We did it, everybody. Meanwhile, of course, please be safe, be kind, be silly, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
All right, monkeying around, start talking.
Shiny Bob calling Alameda. Bob Shiny Clipper calling Alameda.
About your podcast.
We talk about an Emmy-winning comedy series.
We talk about a band who outsold the Beatles and the Stones in 1967.
Still sticking to that story, huh? Well, if you know what's good for you, you'll change your tune.
We talk about a groundbreaking multimedia project
that inspired generations of artists and fans.
All right, throw the book at them.
This book is overdue.
Monkeying Around, a podcast about the monkeys.
All right, this is the secret after show. Just in case, we believe Cornflake will be back next week.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case Cornflake is away next week, here's a thought. Turkey rabbit hole.
Turkey rabbit hole, yes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.